priority right now in the same way that we are. And so we shared a lot of their stories the last couple weeks. And if you bring those up in certain company, a lot of times people just don't want to hear it. Let's just talk about the people that are doing great. Let's just talk about Game 7 tonight, right, Greg? Come on, man. That's way more exciting than the fact that there's people hungry right now, or people who are living in, you know, filth, or there are third world countries where they don't have running water, but, man, those high-def TVs are so sweet. Like, do you ever get caught up in just the crazy world that we live in, where we're so caught up in these things that we think, you know, we talked about before about first world problems, and we laugh and we joke about it. But what Amos does, and it's so irritating, Amos says, yeah, but you have to focus on that. You can't just laugh it off. There's real problems. There are real people suffering. And if you don't care, if you're not the conscience of your nation, then who is? And so we read on in the book of Amos, sure to be depressed, sure to hear a message that's going to make us uncomfortable. It shouldn't surprise us when we open the book of Amos that even us today have a little bit of difficulty with what he's saying. Like, we'd rather just kind of gloss over it and let's go back to the Sermon on the Mount. That makes me feel better. Right? Be nice with each other. Take care of each other. So let's talk a little bit about what life is like today for people. Because when things are going good, things are going great, and you're not struggling too much, people don't tend to talk a lot about God. I mean, they may, like, after a touchdown or something. But other than that, you know, we just kind of save him for a bad day. And in order to kind of register this, there was a sociologist named Christian Smith. And he wrote a book several years ago that was built on some research that he did with young people in the United States. And he went out to kind of investigate the religious and spiritual lives of teenagers. And he found out, and I've mentioned this before, he termed the coin, and it was interesting because he saw a lot of overlap between Muslims and Christians and Hindu and just everybody, agnostic, atheist. Their kids all seem to believe a lot of the same stuff. And they seem to have an outlook on life that was pretty similar. And so he went down and he qualified this or characterized this with the term moralistic therapeutic deism. You probably heard me refer to that a couple times because it's one of the few things that I've read and I've been like, this makes a whole lot of sense. Therapeutic moralistic deism. And he comes up with five basic tenets. And he interviewed thousands and thousands of teenagers, and he asks them questions about God, about their beliefs in God, about how they worship God. And he began to see a lot of the same things coming up. Like most of the teenagers believe that there was a God. Most of the teenagers believe that there was a God. He exists, and he orders things the way that they are. You look around at the world, and you go, yeah, I could believe in kind of this deism. I can believe that there's a God out there. The second thing that all these teenagers reported was that there's a God who wants people to be good and nice and fair to each other. Right? I mean, you hear that a lot from teenagers. We're taught in school. Just be nice to each other, be fair to one another, be at peace with one another. That's what God wants. The third thing he says is that really the goal of life is to be happy. That's what life is about. It's about being happy. And it's about feeling good. That's what teenager after teenager said. There's also this sense that God is not really involved in people's lives unless there was a problem. So if you're living your life, God is just giving you a thumbs up, you know? Way to go. When there was a problem, then you would cry out to God. And I mean, this sounds a lot like some of our national religion, if you are getting there. And the fifth thing, and that is, most people think that if you're a good person, you're going to go to heaven, right? So that's what, after thousands and thousands of interviews with teenagers, those were the basic tenets that most of the teenagers had. And when you think about it, it kind of sounds like a mix of Oprah Winfrey and those feel-good stories on the Today Show mixed with like a Thomas Kinkade painting. Like, that is life, right? That is God. God created us to be good. Be nice to each other, be safe, secure, feel good, be happy. As a matter of fact, this was interesting. In the studies that they conducted interviews with teenagers, and in their interviews with teenagers, over 2,000 times the teenagers used the phrase, feel happy. 2,000 times, yeah, I think God wants me to be happy, wants me to feel good about life. If you've been reading Amos, I know Brian Ringley has, he sees where we're going with this. This is not going to mesh with Amos's view of the world, right? God wants us to be happy and feel good. It's almost like God is at the safe distance, and it's like Batman, right? When you have a problem, you put the Batman signal up, and then God swoops down and he deals with the mess. But other than that, he just lets you kind of be. And we may be thinking about this in reference to Kirk's communion thoughts, like, well, maybe they just don't know any better yet. When they get older, they'll know each other. But Christian Smith suggests this. This is maybe the most troubling sentence of the whole study. Our religiously conventional adolescents seem to be merely absorbing and reflecting religiously what the adult world is routinely modeling for and inculcating in its youth. Just a fancy way of saying, they're that way because we're that way. I mean, they're not making up this religion on their own, right? They're seeing this modeled in the world around them. And when you open the Bible and you take all 66 books, I mean, sure, there's different parts of the Bible you can look at and go, yeah, that seems to be kind of what God wants, right? Wants us to be happy. We talk about Jesus saying that he's come to give life and give it to the full. But then there's these stinking prophets. And the prophets are the band-aid pullers. They're the scab pickers. I want to give you some visuals to really unsettle you before we get into what we're talking about. They're the ones who say, look, I know that you just want to go on with life and say, isn't it great? But there are these pesky prophets that keep elbowing you and jabbing you in the side saying, yeah, but, God wants things to be great. And he wants the best for your life, but there's a whole lot of other people who are living a different way. And so somewhere along the line, somebody has got to stand up for God and be a prophet and begin to look at the world with prophet's eyes. And when the prophets stand up, they tend not to mince words. They tell it like it is, whether you want to hear it or not, and most of the time you don't. And so what do we expect to happen when prophets stand up today? I mean, how do we expect to receive the message of the prophets? With thumbs up, like, man, that was a good message, sir. Thank you for that message, preacher. Thank you for sharing that. The prophets never get that. It's always, we don't want to hear that. You're wrong. You don't understand things. You're the Debbie Downer. Why can't we focus on the good things? And the prophets are constantly saying, yes, but thus saith the Lord. This is what God says. And so I don't know how to do anything better but just to read the message as it comes in the book of Amos. Because I was reading and reflecting, kind of getting back into the mindset of Amos this week, and I came to chapter 4 and I thought, man, what a party crasher. Like, this guy comes right into the midst of a time when Israel's going great. Their economy's booming. Their international relations are as good as they've been before. I mean, just imagine, if you're some of the eldest in the community and you remember the bygone days when those foreign nations were wiping out your land and all of a sudden your grandkids are living and they're taking back some of that land. They're expanding a little bit. This is a good, good time. The depression of bygone eras is just a distant memory. And in that context, Amos gets up with this message. Listen to this, you cows of Bashan grazing on the slopes of Samaria. That's right, he calls them a bunch of fat cows, which isn't really an insult necessarily, but the cows of Bashan were these big, fertile cows, which meant a lot of food, and it was a sign of wealth for the people. So he's calling them out from the very beginning. You women, mean to the poor, cruel to the down and out, indolent and pampered, you demand of your husbands, bring us a tall, cool drink. Sounds like a commercial today. This is serious. I, God, have sworn by my holiness. Be well warned. Judgment day is coming. I mean, that is the essence of Debbie Downer. Everybody's enjoying life, and he's going, hey, judgment's coming. And we've heard it over and over again in the prophets. They're going to rope you up and haul you off. Keep the stragglers in line with cattle prods. They'll drag you through the ruined city walls, forcing you to out single file, talking about the exile, and kick you to kingdom come. This is from the message, by the way. This is God's decree. Come along to Bethel and sin, and then go to Gilgal and keep on sinning. Bring your sacrifices for morning worship. Every third day, bring your tithe. Burn pure sacrifices, thank offerings, speak up, announce free will offerings. That's the kind of religious show that you Israelites just love. This is God's decree. You know, don't you, that I'm the one who emptied your pantries and cleaned out your cupboards, who left you hungry and standing in bread lines? But you never got hungry for me. You continued to ignore me. This is God's decree. Yes, and I'm the one who stopped the rains for 3 months short of harvest. I'd make it rain on one village, but not another. I'd make it rain on one field, but not on another, and that one would dry up. People would stagger from village to village, crazed for water and never quenching their thirst. But you never got thirsty for me. You ignored me. This is God's decree. I hit your crops with diseases and withered your orchards and gardens. Locusts devoured your olive and fig trees, but you continued to ignore me. I revisited you with the old Egyptian plagues, killed your choice young men and prize horses. The stink of rot in your camps was so strong that you held your noses, but you didn't notice me. This is God's decree. I hit you with earthquake and fire, left you devastated like Sodom and Gomorrah. You were like a burning stick snatched from the flames, but you never looked my way. You continued to ignore me. All this I have done to you, Israel, and this is why I've done it. Time's up, O Israel. Prepare to meet your God. Look who's here, mountain shaper, wind maker. He laid out the whole plot before Adam. He brings everything out of nothing. Like dawn out of darkness, he strides across the alpine ridges. His name is God, God of the angel armies. I mean, this is some trash talk, man. I mean, he lays into them. He mocks them. Even calls them fat cows. Chastises them. Uses sarcasm. This is not the typical picture of God that you see throughout the Bible. But he's grown so frustrated with their just disregard for his word and for the plight of others. And so I started asking myself, because as you read these words, even as I read them in a modern translation, they still seem a little bit distant to us because we're not familiar with the names, or we're not familiar with some of the places. It sounds different than what we would say today. And so I started asking myself, I wonder what it would sound like today. If a prophet came to the church, because this was a message for Israel. This wasn't a message for the other nations. There are certainly other places where we find that in the minor prophets, but this message was for Israel. No doubt about it. God's chosen people. He has a special relationship with Israel, and that's who he blasts. And you could very easily see how the church would be in the same situation today. We've been called out by God. We are the ecclesia, the called out to be God's people. And what would his prophetic word sound like to us? What would Amos's message sound like to us? Because if we're going to, I think, hear the words that Amos's people heard, it will be unsettling. It will make us question everything that we do. It will make us look around and think, I don't know if we have figured anything out. It'll make us ask some of the questions that Kurt asked this morning. It'll make us uncomfortable. It'll make us wish that we just didn't talk about that kind of stuff. It's Father's Day, right? A church down the road is giving away a TV today. Let's do that. Like, let's not talk about Amos today. Let's just give away TVs to dads. And so I did my best to brainstorm what it might sound like. And maybe this is too unsettling for you, but this is the words that came to me as a message of prophecy, kind of contemporized to today. Listen up, all you white-collared workers, you Fortune 500 executives and members of the upper middle class, all of you who live behind white picket fences of your suburban mansions, as you claim to know the problems and have the solutions facing the poor who serve you coffee at McDonald's or make minimum wage doing jobs that you would never consider doing, You sit around in your comfortable air-conditioned houses, reclining in front of your 75-inch flat-screen television, watching movies and television shows that numb your mind to the real problems that other people are facing. I admit it, things look great right now, but don't be perceived by the facade. There are real problems facing the world that you are just ignoring. You can't keep going on like this, ignoring the injustices of others. There are a third world countries that don't enjoy the conveniences that your people have enjoyed for 100 years. You clamor for high-definition television while they lack indoor plumbing. You're so invested in your sports teams while there are still mothers dying in their childbirth. You better open up your eyes and cut your hearts. God's people look at the world with different eyes. And yet all the while you show up to the church building on Sunday mornings. You write your check, and maybe you even volunteer for vacation Bible school. You check it off your list, and you enjoy the praise of others, impressed by all your religious activities. You love the religious show just as much as everybody else. You're more concerned about how the hour-long worship service goes than the other 167 hours of the week. God forbid something doesn't go according to plan there, but you shrug your shoulders at all the sin in the world the other hours and days of the week. Just keep living it up. You're going to have to pay eventually. Don't forget, I'm the one in charge of the world. When there's famines and earthquakes and floods and tsunamis, I can cause them and I can withhold them. You act like you're in charge, but this is my world. And everything that's happening is happening so that you will remember me and turn to me. More than anything else, I want you to come to me. Work as agents of change in this world. Be more than good people. Even the false gods enjoy good people. You are to be world-changing people. People who refuse to accept the status quo. People who embrace when times are good, but who are always aware that times aren't good for everyone. Work with those who no one else wants to. The ones that the system forgets and overlooks. The oppressed, the forgotten, the orphans, the widows, the elderly in nursing homes, AIDS patients, homosexuals, transgender, the mentally ill, the physically disabled, people who don't speak English, people who are living in small apartments trying to make ends meet, people who smell bad, people in jail, people who look differently than you, people who are annoying, people who drive you crazy. Stop taking the easy road. Perhaps this is what the word of the Lord would sound like to us today. And if there wasn't at least something in there that bothers you, and we probably didn't go quite far enough. If there wasn't something in there that makes you feel uncomfortable, we didn't go quite far enough. Because you can't read the minor prophets and at some point go, well, man, I wonder what this says about me. I wonder what this says about how I spend my money. I wonder what this says about how I decide to choose my time. It's not about being fatalist and saying that you've got it all messed up, but it's about being shaken awake. It's about reminding you that the status quo is not good enough. I can't make this change for myself any more than I can make it for you. It's hard enough to look at these things in the mirror and say, how do I listen to the words of the prophets and change my life? You have to do it on your own. Look in your own mirror. Consider your own bank account. Consider your own time spent. Consider your own relationships. Consider your own posture to your own life. All those things. And ask yourself constantly, is this how God is using me? Is this how God wants to best use me? How do I open my eyes to the rest of the world? How do I consider the fact that my world stops here, but that's just such a small part of everyone else's life? God calls us as Christians, and we're baptized into His church and into His life. He calls us to wear different glasses, where all of a sudden we see the world differently than everybody else. And if you haven't had a conversation with a non-Christian, which goes something like this, "Man, that doesn't make any sense to me," then you, as a Christian, say, "Exactly. Let me tell you why it should make sense to you." And then share the gospel. Because it doesn't make sense if you don't know Christ. Nothing I have said makes any sense if you don't know the Lord. That's why the prophets were changing everything. Because even people who claimed to know the Lord weren't living that way. It's not any way to sugarcoat this, right? I can't be Mary Poppins and give you a spoonful of sugar and try to get that message to go down a little bit more difficult. I mean, more easy. I think that's the point of the message. It should be difficult going down. And all of us in this country, every single person in this room, has to come to the terms of the fact that it's too easy for us sometimes. No matter what our problems are, or what our issues are, and we all have many, sometimes in our country, in our time, it's just a little too easy for us. And that breeds complacency. And that breeds the message of Amos. That's exactly why Amos is relevant for us today. Now we're going to try to find a spoonful of sugar next week. But for now, I think that we just need to allow those words to permeate into our hearts, even on this Father's Day. Just allow it to slowly invade our life and make us do things that maybe we're not ready to do, but just need to take that jump of faith. Maybe something that we've always been thinking about, but we haven't quite made the call. Somehow allowing God to come into our lives and use us. This morning we will sing a song that will remind us that look, we're never going to get it all figured out. And at the end of the day, we just lean into God because our God is powerful and strong, and He will do all that He can to get us on course. So I'd invite you to stand and sing with us this final song here this morning. God is